Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. The winter season is upon us. Hanukkah begins this weekend. Winter officially begins this coming Wednesday, and Christmas is next weekend. You know, I'm a Christian, and I certainly celebrate Christmas, but I'm also a Jew. Most people know about Christmas, but few understand Hanukkah. Hanukkah, also called the Feast of Dedication, the Festival of Lights, or the Feast of the Maccabees, is a Jewish festival that is celebrated for 8 days. Hanukkah reaffirms the ideals of Judaism and commemorates a particular rededication of the Second Temple of Jerusalem by the lighting of candles on each day of the festival. Although not mentioned in Hebrew scriptures, Hanukkah became widely celebrated and remains one of the most popular Jewish religious observances. So join with your Jewish brothers and sisters and celebrate what God has done for all of us. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, with winter officially arriving, will you still be out hunting or staying home and being warm?
Well, Colonel, I can tell you, I'd rather be staying home and being warm, but I haven't had the best season yet. My freezer isn't totally full yet, so I have been out hunting, and yes, it's cold, and probably I really need to get one more deer before I can fill up that freezer, so I'm going to be freezing my little Watusi off out there in the cold, in the snow, and you can feel sorry for me if you like.
I might even loan you a ranger tab.
Well, that'd keep me warm.
Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to compare the threat to our nation at the time of Pearl Harbor to the threat we face today. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then Colonel Chris Colenda will introduce us to the Saber 6 Foundation. They're all about treating veterans correctly, properly, right. Then retired Marine General Arnold Panero will look back at 2022 and forward at 2023. And of course, we'll discuss last weekend's Army-Navy football game. I liked going there.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can do it on Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom, and we will, of course, start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
Well, the U.S. weapons sent to Ukraine to aid the war effort against Russia have made their way into the hands of the notorious Boko Haram terrorist group in Nigeria. Nigerian President Buhari made the revelation while speaking at an international commission meeting. Buhari revealed that weapons used for the war in Ukraine are beginning to filter into the region, and that the illegal movement of arms into the region has increased the offensive capabilities of terrorist groups. We have sent weapons worth billions of dollars to Ukraine since Russia invaded the country. However, we have failed to carry out proper oversight of those weapons, which could lead to disastrous blowback for years to come. According to the Washington Post, U.S. monitors have conducted in-person inspections for only about 10% of the 22,000 weapons that require special oversight sent to Ukraine. The report stated further that our officials have been able to conduct just 2 in-person inspections of items requiring enhanced oversight at weapons depots. Alongside the lack of adequate weapons oversight, our government has also failed to conduct a proper audit of funds sent to aid Ukraine. We have handed Ukraine around $10 billion in humanitarian assistance and another $13 billion in economic assistance since the war began.
How could this much money not be tempting to individuals in Ukraine and elsewhere, especially since our government is not checking to see how the money's being spent? It's well known that money given to poor nations, the bulk of it goes to the pockets of the leaders. This is normal, so why wasn't our military and our diplomats doing their proper supervision of where the money was spent? If this only happened occasionally over there, that would be one thing, but it's everywhere. The only explanation is incompetence on the part of government. We need to stop funding Ukraine until we can oversee where the money goes.
Ever since Ukraine began turning the tide against Russia's invasion, the fear of Ukraine striking into Russia has haunted wobbly U.S. and NATO leaders. The fear of escalation and a possible Russian nuke response has been a constant concern in the major NATO-Russia proxy war being fought in Ukraine. This is a primary reason NATO has refrained from giving Ukraine longer-range missile and rocket systems that can strike Russian-occupied territories, much less Russia itself. The U.S. even secretly modified the advanced HIMARS rocket launchers it gave Ukraine so they can't be used to fire long-range missiles into Russia. But this self-imposed straitjacket, straight out of our initial Vietnam playbook, is increasingly out of touch with the reality, and Ukraine is apparently using its own store of weapons to hit targets inside Russian-occupied areas, as well as bases in Mother Russia itself. NBC News reported that a blast hit an airbase inside Russia, the latest in a series of apparent Ukrainian drone attacks that showcase an ability to strike at the heart of Russian territory and suggest a new boldness in Kiev's fight against Moscow's war.
It makes sense that Ukraine would hit Russia any way they can. Russia is hitting them every way they can, and everybody knows that the average Russian citizen does not favor this war. Hitting Russia is a reasonable move for Ukraine, a bit scary for the rest of the world, but a good move.
The defense authorization bill Congress just passed reflects Washington's failed, undisciplined leadership and lack of accountability to the American people. America's defense budget needs to be sustainable for U.S. strategy to be credible. A nearly $860 billion DOD allocation, well over the Pentagon's request, is not tenable and will exacerbate the long-term national security threats of our $31 trillion national debt and staggering inflation. Congress also had an opportunity and a duty to reassert its role in deciding when and why we send our men and women into harm's way. But it failed to include repeals of outdated authorizations for use of military force in the NDAA, leaving the door open for presidents to take America to war without congressional approval, a dereliction of Congress' congressional duty.
Our Constitution gives Congress the power to allocate reasonable budgets and to declare war. Our current Congress failed this miserably. In the Congress we just elected, lawmakers must put defense spending on a sustainable path and honor their responsibility to make tough decisions on war and peace. That's why we elect them.
And President Biden just traded a convicted Russian arms dealer for a guilty woke basketball player while leaving an innocent former U.S. Marine to rot in Russian jail. And to make matters worse, Brittany Griner, who pled guilty to having cannabis vape oil in her luggage, was only in Russian jail for a few months, while Paul Whelan, who was set up and falsely convicted of espionage, has been imprisoned in a Russian labor camp for nearly 4 years. Whelan, 52 years old, remains there, where he is to continue serving out a 16-year sentence. Russian arms trafficker Victor Bout had been serving time in a U.S. federal prison since 2011. Recall that Griner, who is a black lesbian, also refused to stand for the national anthem. Meanwhile, Biden blamed Russia for his failure to include Whelan in the trade. Quote, "We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan," Biden said recently. "This was not a choice about which American to bring home. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's. We will never give up."
It doesn't matter what the Russians say or want. It's Biden's job to make things happen. It should have been both released for Bout, or maybe just Whelan, or no deal. They wanted their guy back too. This was just blown. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cv4a.org. That's cv4a.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom, and then we'll talk with Colonel Chris Colenda about treating vets right. Eddie's troop, take a break.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Berry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Most home invasions occur when people are at work between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Because of this, we highly recommend the installation of a home security video surveillance system. These systems are easy to install and cost only a few hundred dollars. They allow you to monitor your home while you're at work via your computer or cell phone. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are information and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, did you know American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. I eat it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. As we discussed on the show a couple of weeks ago, 81 years ago this month, on December 7th, 1941, Japanese Commander Mitsuo Fujita was preparing to lead an airborne strike force of 49 Kate bombers, 40 torpedo bombers, 51 Val dive bombers, and 43 Zeke fighters on the first wave of an assault on Pearl Harbor. At 8:54 that terrible Sunday morning, a second wave of 167 aircraft added to the devastation. When the surprise attack was over, 3,581 Americans were dead or wounded. The largest naval anchorage in the Pacific was littered with sunken and burning U.S. warships. The best dry dock and ship repair facilities west of California sustained some damage, and less than 25% of our military aircraft based in Hawaii were still operational. Yes, the Japanese made some big mistakes that day, as we've discussed before, but they totally surprised us and hit us hard. The Japanese surprise attack was but the first blow in a series of disasters. That following day, as Imperial troops invaded the Philippines, President Franklin Roosevelt proclaimed that December 7, 1941 to be, quote, a date which will live in infamy, end quote, and Congress declared war on Japan. 3 days later, on December 11th, Fascist Italy and Nazi Germany declared war on us in support of their Axis partner in Tokyo. By then, nearly 500,000 young Americans had already visited military recruiting stations volunteering to fight, and the phrase, Remember Pearl Harbor, was a watchword. When the war finally ended in Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945, more than 16 million men and women had served in the U.S. Armed Forces. Each year, we praise the courage and resolve of the Americans who were in Hawaii that terrible day. Yet few ever acknowledge or discuss the massive intelligence failures and lack of situational awareness in Washington that allowed such a horrific surprise attack to occur. Nor does anyone remember that America's poor preparations for war resulted in the loss of every engagement with the Japanese from December 7, 1941 until the Battle of Midway on June 4, 1942, 6 months later. Absent from our appropriate reflections on what happened at Pearl Harbor are acknowledgments of responsibility of officials in Washington who dismissed Japanese communications intercepted and decrypted at our stations that would have forewarned defenders in Hawaii and the Philippines. Unmentioned are the shortages of weapons and personnel, even searchlights, that prompted commanders to park our aircraft in Oahu and Manila wingtip to wingtip so they could be protected from sabotage and making them an easy target for attacking aircraft. The paucity of spare parts, fuel, and navigation equipment, the consequence of inadequate appropriations, sorely limited how many long-range patrol aircraft could be dispatched to provide early warning. Worse, FDR and his closest advisors simply ignored warnings from the British, Dutch, Australians, and his own Pacific Fleet commander, Admiral Husband Kimmel, about Japanese threats. FDR dismissed Allied alarms about the Berlin-Rome-Tokyo axis prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor. And today, we're facing a four-sided axis of Communist China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, and these pose a much greater threat to our national security than Tokyo ever could. All four have or are developing nuclear weapons and the means of delivering them against our nation at home and abroad and our allies. In Beijing, Xi Jinping threatens the freedom of Taiwan with advanced weaponry and more naval power and air power in the Pacific and South China Sea than we and our allies can muster altogether. His navy is bigger than ours, but ours, for the moment, is more sophisticated, but it's spread out around the world. Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine is the largest military operation in Europe since World War II. Russia's army is clearly a mess, but their armed forces have already employed hypersonic missiles, of which we have none, nor the means of defending against them. The Biden White House discounts Israeli warnings of existential threats from Iran, apparently in the hopes of convincing the Ayatollahs to pump more oil. In North Korea, the Kim dynasty, despite draconian sanctions, has managed to build nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them against U.S. territory. So what are we doing about this? Well, besides forcing COVID jabs on all our troops and teaching CRT to them and ensuring they all use the right pronouns, the answer is very, very little. The current administration has missed the lessons of December 7, 1941. Production of the new B-21 stealth bombers has been cut from 150 aircraft to 100. We've shipped huge amounts of our military reserve supplies to Ukraine and haven't replaced them. And huge amounts of our strategic petroleum reserve are gone, used to try to drive down the price of gas here. And, oh yeah, we sold some to China. And our government is spending money as if it grows on trees. We're in huge debt, and we're paying Americans not to work. And while America's defenses are gutted, our adversaries are preparing for aggression. Pray we wake up before there's another Pearl Harbor. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
There was a man who made not just one, but three jumps from the stratosphere, and the first manned spaceflights would have never happened without him jumping. Joe Kittinger died this past week at the age of 94. He had a very interesting career as a military officer, and his jumps from high altitude helped NASA better understand the risks of space so it could shape ways to cope as it raced the Soviets into space during the 1960s. Kittinger was born in 1928, which, as with all the Mercury astronauts except for John Glenn, made him too young to fly during World War II, but positioned him perfectly to participate in the emerging space race. After his flight training and initial work in pistons and early jet fighters, he was assigned to Holloman Air Force Base in research and development. Then, October 4, 1957 happened. The Soviet Union launched Sputnik. The country went a little nuts. The Soviets were soon to be in a position to hurl nuclear bombs on the U.S. from outer space, and what was the government going to do about it? Well, one immediate thing was to establish NASA to take over the work of the former National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. NASA's mission was all things space, with manned spaceflight a high priority. But the Air Force had two shoestring projects designed to explore the physiological challenges at the fringe of space. Project Manhigh began in 1955, during which Kittinger flew a balloon to an altitude of 96,784 feet, but he didn't jump. That would come during Project Excelsior, which began in 1958, with Kittinger being the test director. He made three jumps, including his record leap on August 16, 1960, from 102,800 feet. But a lot did go wrong during these jumps. For example, on his first jump, his faceplate fogged up, and he missed his planned exit altitude by 3 miles. When he finally left his seat, his stabilizing drogue prematurely deployed. Its bridle wrapped around his neck and caused a 120 RPM spin. He was lucky to have survived, saved by an automatic opening device on his main parachute. He G-locked during the spin and only regained consciousness after he landed in the desert. You know, on his record-setting jump, just moments before he stepped off, Kittinger radioed his own thoughts about space. He said, quote, "There's a hostile sky above me. Man will never conquer space. He may live in it, but he will never conquer it. The sky above is void, very black, and very hostile. And he's been proven right on both accounts. Mankind has not conquered space, but thanks to the work of Joe Kittinger, we have learned to live in it. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss treating vets right with Colonel Chris Kalenda. Then we'll talk with General Arnold Panero. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break, do another 50, then stand at ease. Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome retired Army Colonel and a fellow West Pointer, Chris Kalenda. He's got a PhD. He served as a trusted advisor to 3 or 4-star generals and 2 undersecretaries of defense, and became the first American to have both fought the Taliban as a commander in combat and negotiated with them in peace talks. I can't even imagine that. Today, he runs the Strategic Leaders Academy, a consulting firm that helps veterans and their family members build joyful, profitable businesses. He's the founder of the Saber 6 Foundation in Milwaukee, a 501c3 nonprofit that helps the 800 paratroopers from his Afghan military unit, the 1st and the 91st Cav and the 173rd Airborne Division, also known as Task Force Sabre, stay alive and thrive. So this guy hasn't stopped being a leader taking care of the troops. And he's written books and been featured in a lot of media. Enough of that. Welcome, Chris. Glad you could join us, bro.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Chris, start by telling us about why you decided to go to West Point. What gave you that idea? And then talk a bit about your career in Mother Army.
Well, I went a bit kicking and screaming into it. I wanted to go to college on a baseball scholarship. And my parents said, just apply to the academies and just keep your options open. So I was like, fine, whatever. And I mean, West Point intrigued me. And then the day I graduated from high school, I get a call from the senator's office saying, hey, you've been appointed to the military academy. Do you want to accept it? And my 17-year-old thought process was, well, if I go and I don't like it, I can always leave. But if I don't go, then I'll always wonder, could I have made it? So I said yes, and I went. And never looked back. I mean, I thrived there at West Point, and took the same attitude in the Army. I wanted to see what it was like, kept an open mind, and wound up staying 24 and a half years.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I did want to go to West Point. I don't know why. I'm the first person in my family to ever wear the military uniform, but I wanted to be in the Army and I wanted to go to West Point. And it took me a couple of attempts, but I did. And I liked it. Didn't need to stay forever. Stayed 22 years. We got a lot in common. Okay. What did you do in the Army? What branch? What were some of your good assignments?
Yeah, I was a cavalryman in the Army. So I started off, first assignment was along the old East-West German border. So 88 to 91 was on the old East-West German border. I mean, watching East Germans and Soviets across the fence, it was absolutely fascinating. Being there when the fence opened up between East and West Germany was an experience I will never forget. Seeing these little East German cars called Trabants, they're little small matchbook, kind of cars, very tiny, didn't run very fast, can only go about 50 miles an hour full out. But they were lined up to the horizon, waiting for the fence to open up between East and West Germany, and would come across, and the West Germans would give them 50 West marks, which was like a month's pay for an East German just for coming across. And oh my goodness, all the fresh fruit was sold out of the markets. All of the meat was sold out. McDonald's within the 10-kilometer zone, you couldn't get a Big Mac or a McDonald's and fries because they were completely cleaned out. It was utterly amazing. And then I served just in a variety of assignments, cavalry assignments, so wind up teaching at West Point for 3 years in the history department, and then was leading this group of 800 paratroopers in Afghanistan for a 15-month deployment, 2007 and 8, and then wound up being senior advisor to 3 4-star generals and 2 undersecretaries of defense and some of the stuff that you read in my bio. And then finally, I was asked by the secretary to be his personal representative in the talks with the Taliban. And I agreed to do that, but that meant declining a brigade level command, retiring from the military and becoming a Department of Defense civilian. So I did that for about 2.5 years, found that we just have a really hard time getting our act together as a government, and resigned in 2014 and started my own consulting business.
Okay. That sounds like you weren't bored.
No.
but by the way, you've got a PhD. When and where did you get it, and in what?
So I got a PhD from King's College in War Studies, and I did the PhD starting in 2014. So they wanted to bring a practitioner on the faculty, and they said, if you teach a class on contemporary war, we'll waive the tuition on a PhD.
Woo-hoo.
That sounds like a fair trade to me. So went to London and did my dissertation. I focused on why big U.S. military interventions turned into fiascos. And I looked at Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq, and looked for the common errors that we make, the self-inflicted errors that we make. Of course, each of the three situations was different, but the errors that we make were very common. You know, if you one time is an accident, 2 times is a coincidence, 3 times you've got a trend. Well, we've got 3 times. Mm-hmm. And so I eventually turned it into my latest book, which is called Zero Sum Victory, What We're Getting Wrong About War, which just won a National Book Award.
We'll have to have you back on to discuss that book.
I'd love to. Yeah.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Colonel Chris Kalenda. Talk to us about the Sabre 6 Foundation. You really are concerned and are more than concerned. You're doing something about taking care of your troops, right?
Yeah. You know, they're entering the most dangerous days of their lives. And we're coming up on the 15-year anniversary of that deployment. And I always want to do something significant to honor their service and sacrifice. And so and part of that entailed visiting the graves of the 6 troopers from our unit who were killed in action during that deployment. And they are buried from Nebraska, essentially due east, all the way to Arlington National Cemetery. It's about 1,700 miles. And I thought, I could drive to visit each of their graves. That just didn't seem substantial enough. I could walk the distance. I'm capable of doing that, but it just take way too long. And so I thought, I know what I could do. I could ride a bicycle. I bet I could ride a bike 1,700 miles to visit their graves. And so I decided I was going to do that. The only problems were that I didn't own a bicycle and I hadn't ridden a bicycle in over 20 years. So I said to myself, I'm not getting any younger. This is April of 2021. Not getting any younger. So if I'm going to do this, it's time to do it now. So I went out and bought a road bike. I hired a cycling coach to get my butt in shape. And I started telling people so I don't chicken out. So I just finished the ride, a little over a month ago. And I thought, you know, we could do some good with this. I think we have and do some good raising funds to take care of the 800 survivors and their families who need help. This group of 800, they're entering the most dangerous days of their lives. And it's because of a combination of post-traumatic stress, which we all have. If you served in close combat and you know exactly what I'm talking about, you've got post-traumatic stress. You've experienced that. Midlife. So there's this thing called a happiness curve that looks like a U. At the top of the happiness curve on the left side is age 20. And on the other side is your early 60s. The bottom of the U is age 47. So we commonly refer to it as midlife crisis. And then the third element of this very dangerous combination is a sense of drift where you don't quite have that same purpose and belonging. You have a hard time recovering it. You maybe had it in the military. You don't have it now. And so those three factors, post-traumatic stress, midlife crisis, and drift, or the sense of emptiness, is a very deadly combination. We've now lost more to suicide and overdoses than to enemy fire.
There's more to talk about Saber 6 Foundation, and Chris is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do most days. Then take a break or stay in the area. Chris and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health, and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Chris Kalenda. Chris, we were talking about the Saber 6 Foundation, and you were talking about the key things that seem to cause your troops, I guess everybody, but particularly your troops and guys who have been in combat together, to, shall we say, end their lives early?
Right.
Wrap that one up for us. You've identified the issues. Remind us of them again and what the solution is.
Yeah, so it's a combination of post-traumatic stress, midlife crisis, and a sense of drift or the sense of emptiness. You're lacking purpose and belonging. You know, some people are able to find new purpose and belonging, make that pivot, and you know, this foundation is going to help them soar to new heights. There are a lot of people who are struggling with these issues, and it's only going to get worse. The average demographic of this group of 800 is age 35 to 45. So they're entering the danger zone. And we want to help them find new purpose, belonging, and wellness so they can soar to new heights. And then finally, there's some who are in a very bad situation, drifted for a long time. We got one of our best non-commissioned officers from 2007, top 1% guy who, you know, now lives in a dumpster. And he's a meth addict, and he's one of several stories. I can't know that people who had my back for 15 months in combat are going through this and not try to do something about it. So that's why I set up the Saber 6 Foundation, and the 1700 mile bicycle ride was to honor the dead and then support the living.
Okay, if people want to learn more about the Saber 6 Foundation, I presume There's a website?
Yeah, you can go to Saber6Foundation.com or honorride.us, and you'll find all about the Saber 6 Foundation, what we're all about, what we're doing to help, and then a little bit about how you can support us.
Great. Now, I want to talk about the Strategic Leaders Academy. That sounds awesome. Take us there.
Well, when I set up my own consulting business in 2014, I wanted to help people. You learn a lot about leadership in the military. One of the life experiences I had growing up, I was scrawny and awkward in high school. And the more I tried to fit in, the more awkward I became. And that made me a target for bullies. It made me target for, molesting. And, I said to myself, one of the things that attracted me to West Point was, I never wanted to feel like that again. And, being at West Point would help me do that and would also help me lead in a way so that nobody under my leadership, nobody under my command would ever feel that way either. And setting up a leadership consulting business helps me to help other leaders make sure that the most vulnerable people in their companies, in their formations, never have to feel that way also, that they can be their best and contribute their best to the team's success and do so confidently that they're going to be taken care of. So that's why I set up a leadership consulting business. And there are a lot of veterans who feel like I do, who have so much to contribute, who would be great consultants, but just don't know where to start. And so SLA also helps veterans set up a meaningful, joyful, and profitable consulting business so that they can continue to serve for the common good.
That is awesome. I've done some leadership consulting. And if you're paying attention at all, you learn a lot about leadership, both positive and negative leadership. Yes, I want to be like him, and no, I don't want to be like him in the military. And it's virtually all transferable to the civilian life. You got to take the combat out of it, but the leadership is the leadership. And it really is being focused on the mission and taking care of the troops. And you really got a handle on that. That's for sure.
I like to say there's no such thing as military leadership. There's just leadership. Uh-huh. And it's applied in a different context. But you're right. The principles are all the same. I mean, one of the ones that you mentioned earlier about, I want to be like this person, I don't want to be like that person, is the importance of leaders setting the example, being exemplars for the kind of performance and values and behavior that they want everybody else to follow. If you go to a Civil War battlefield, I know you've been to them, you see a lot of leaders on horseback, statues of leaders on horseback. And the reason why leaders were on horseback in the Civil War is not because they were lazy or privileged, a little bit because they could see better, but mostly it was because they were the most vulnerable person on the battlefield, and very deliberately making themselves the most vulnerable person on the battlefield. Everybody's shooting at them. If you're on a horse, everybody's shooting at you. Well, and the message is, if I can stand my ground and I can do my job, so can everybody else.
That's a good point. When you're on a horse in that kind of an environment, yes, you can see better, but you can also be seen better by the enemy and by your troops. And that's the issue.
Right. You look at the difference between Afghanistan and Iraq. Afghanistan, when push came to shove, senior Afghan leaders just seemed to steal away in the middle of the night, take the money and run. And the whole thing collapsed immediately afterwards. And then you look at the Zelensky in Ukraine. When he was offered a ride out of there, he said, I don't want a ride. I want more ammo. And his willingness to stand his ground, to set the example, is a key reason why the Ukrainian forces have rallied like they have, fought the Russians to a standstill, and now pushing them back.
Yes, sir. Chris, one of the things that you have pushed in everything I've read about is, how should we treat veterans right? We've only got a couple of minutes left, but make a couple of points of things that you think we really want our listeners to take away from our conversation today.
Yeah, let's have better conversations. Let's actually build a bridge. Let's actually communicate with our veterans and vice versa. Right now, this gulf has grown so large that you know, civilians will say, thank you for your service. And it's like, well, you have no idea what I did in the service. How can you thank me? And then veterans now saying, well, thank you for your support, having no idea what that person might have done or not done. And those, they just end conversations. They don't create any more understanding. What we need to do is just start engaging with our veterans more productively. Oh, what did you do in the service? Tell me a little bit about that. Where did you serve? What is the best experience that you had in the service? Just those sort of simple questions build a bridge, build some common understanding, let a person know that what they did was actually appreciated. And if you're a veteran, talk about it. It's not only good for you, it's also good for society to talk a little bit about what they serve and let people know the richness of military service and why, you know, why it's so beneficial to America.
Yes, sir. Take one more minute now and talk about how every veteran can find new purpose and belonging, stay alive and thrive. That's something that I know that the Strategic Leader Academy is about. Mention that.
Yeah, I think having a sense of purpose, being willing to look through the windshield rather than a rearview mirror is absolutely vital. So what are you living for? What is your next goal in life? What is the next impact that you're going to make? Because your impact is worth making and your life is worth living. So in each of these situations, hardship situations, people who are willing to look through the windshield and believe that they've got a why for the future and plan that out are always more successful. You call it post-traumatic success. And then find new belonging, whether it's with other veterans groups, other community groups, a place where you feel like you can fit in, and then diet and exercise. I mean, those three, purpose, belonging, and wellness, are very powerful and are going to help people live a life of ascendance where their best days are always in front of them.
Wow, do I agree with you. Chris, that's wonderful. How can listeners plug into the Strategic Leaders Academy?
The best way is to go to our website, strategicleadersacademy.com. You find ways to get in contact with me. I'm on social media, so LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. Pretty easy to find there. And always respond over email, chris@strategicleadersacademy.com. So yeah, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, pretty responsive.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris, for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform and for what you're doing now. I'm really impressed. That's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Marine General Arnold Pinero as we review this year and look at next year. We'll also discuss last weekend's Army-Navy football game. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for Jumpin' Jacks. Do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.